Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Ksuvos is Pei Gimel. We're back on Pei Beis Amud Aleph. We're starting today at the two dots towards the top of the Amud. Beginning with the words Havugavra, we thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf as long as Zech Nishmat Liba Gabriel Bashmuel. We are now up to story number two. So just to review story number one, involved a man who was ready to do Yibam to his Yivama. Her husband died and leaves over now the wife, the widow, some brothers, and he left over in the state as well. Now we know, as we have discussed already time and again throughout Yivamas in the last couple of days, we spent a particular amount of attention to this halacha, and that is that when the Yavam does the mitzvah of Yibam, so he inherits the entire estate of the brother. It is not going to be divided equitably amongst the brothers, but rather the one who does Yivam is going to step in the shoes, so to say, of his brother, and he's going to become the heir, the sole heir of the entire estate of the brother. So what was one of the other brother's intentions? Let's stop this mitzvah of Yibam from happening, because if our brother does the mitzvah of Yibam, he's going to get the entire estate and we're going to get nothing, and so let's stop it. So one of the brothers wanted to give a get to his Yivama, like we already explained, like we discussed yesterday, by him giving a get to his Yivama. So basically he's saying, we're disqualifying her from doing the mitzvah of Yibam, and now the mitzvah of Yibam is not going to happen, and no one's going to solely inherit the estate of our brother, and we're all going to divide it equitably. And that was his intention. So the brother who wanted to do the mitzvah of Yibam went over to him and said to him, look, my brother, why don't we do the following? If this is an issue of money, so I'll tell you what, I'll divide half the estate with you. Okay, deal. They shake on it. They, you know, king and suitor, whatever you want to add to the discussion. So the matter came in front of Rav Yosef, and Rav Yosef said that the marriage, of course, is a marriage. The Yibam's a good Yibam, and none of the estate is going to get divided. In other words, the brother has no ability or no right to give over any of the estate over to you. And the reason why is we went over, and we're going to say over again today as we finish up yesterday's daf, is because when the husband marries his Yavama and he gets the estate, the entire estate is frozen. It's a frozen asset. And the entire estate is going to be earmarked towards the ksuva of his wife, because remember, he's not writing his own ksuva for this woman. He's just going to be using the ksuva of his dead brother. So the entire estate, therefore, is going to be secured for that ksuva. And as we pointed out yesterday, and we're going to say again today, even if the estate far surpasses the amount of the ksuva, it does not matter. The entire estate is going to be secured for that ksuva, and so therefore the brother has simply no ability to give any of the estate of his brother over to his and any of the other brothers. That was Rav Yosef's ruling. That's what we saw yesterday, and that concludes story number one.
Why does he say he can't give it away? So it's not his.
Yes. Well, but in other words, yeah. Okay, true. Okay, wait, so very good, very good. So that kind of sets us up for story number two. So the answer is, even if it were his, he couldn't give it away. And maybe the answer to your question is just simply, in other words, we have a chiddush and we're going to say even a larger chiddush. You'll see what I mean. Let's see story number two. So, ha'u gavra denafla yivama b'masa mechasya. So, story number two, starting points basically the same. So, a person has a yivama that falls to him in front in the town of Masa Mechasya. Ba'achu lemifsala b'gita minei. And again, same scenario, where the brother says, don't you dare, right? And another surviving brother says, don't you dare do the mitzvah of yibam, because if you do, you're going to get the entire estate. I want a division of our brother's estate. It's not fair. Right? That's that's the battle cry. Right? It's not fair. You shouldn't be the one getting the entirety of the estate. So Amalei my day techim mishum nachse ana benachse pagin alach. So once again, this man who was ready to do the mitzvah of Yibam, so he made an offer to his brother. He said, look, if it's about the money, let's divide the estate of our brother. Settle down. So Amalei mistafina davad lika da avab bepumpadisa rama. So the other brother says, come on, I'm on to you people. Like those Ramayim, those tricksters in Pumpadisa, meaning referencing back to the first story. Yeah, you say you're going to split it, but I know what's going to happen. You're not going to split it. Okay. Now, mind you, by the way, there was no chicanery that was done in the previous story. Meaning, the previous story was just a halacha. I mean, the halacha is it's a frozen asset. So nobody tricked anybody. I guess the trick in the previous story is that he gave him the impression that we're going to split it, and maybe he even thought that he could split it. But okay. Anyway, so Amalei Ibai's plog lach mehashta. So the Gemara says, well, why don't we do the following? Why don't we split it from this point going forward? Now the Gemara says like this. Look, we know that there is a halacha. And this is an interesting halacha we're about to see. And that is doing a kinyan now, but the transaction occurring at a later point in time. So for example, Amar Rav Yochanan, Amar lechaver lech umeshoch parazu, v'lo tia kenu yalach el alachar shloshim yom. Okay, with every kinyan. So what needs to happen is a maisa kinyan. You need an action that is going to support the transaction. Good. So a maisa kinyan, when we get to Kedushim, we're going to see all the maisa kinyanim. But right now, just suffice to say right now, Mashicha. In other words, if I want to buy a cow from you, so we're going to agree, we'll agree to terms. It can even be a transfer of money. But when does the maisa kinyan, when is the action done? Through Mashicha, when I pull the cow in my direction. So here in this interesting scenario, in this discussion we're about to entertain, the Maisa Kinyan is done now, but you know what? The actual transaction will be delayed for another 30 days. For whatever reason, the Gemara over here doesn't explain why they have to construct such a scenario. Right now, we're just talking about the efficacy of whether or not it could work. Can I do the action now and suspend the actual transaction to a later point in time? So Rav Yochanan is quoted as saying, So Rav Yochanan says, it works. So I'll do the Maisa Kinyan now, and it'll take effect later, and good. And even if the cow is in a swamp, meaning right now, 30 days later, it's not in the best position right now where I could do a Kinyan, it doesn't matter. I did the Maisa Kinyan, so therefore it counts. That is what Rav Yochanan taught us. So the Gemara says, what the Gemara is trying to do now is create some sort of parallel between between that case and our case. Our case over here, once he marries his Yavama, that's it. All the assets are frozen, like done. Like nothing to talk about. So what the Gemara now is suggesting is okay, well, how about before the marriage? Meaning, let's do a Maisa Kinyan now, before the marriage, and then it'll affect the assets later on. We'll point out at the end of this whole discussion, that's it, correct. It's not going to work. But okay, right, that's what the Gemara is suggesting right now. So the Gemara says we're going to draw a very, very basic distinction. In the case of the cow, biado, it's within his ability, within his control. Meaning, you know, we say this time and again, right, transaction is all a function of ownership. In other words, if I have the ability in to transact now, so if I want to put a delay in it, I could put a delay in it. That's not a big deal. But over here in our case, right, it's not even his now, so he can't affect a transaction with something that's not currently his right now. His brother's estate is not his until he does the mitzvah of Yibam. So the Gemara says now, just in terms of that psak of Rav Yochanan, the Gemara is a little bit confused because there is another psak by Rav Yochanan in that the case of the Mashiach of the cow doesn't work. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says it's a technical discussion. You have to, in order for it to be effective, you have to say Kani Me'achshav, meaning that if you want this kinyan to work on a delay, right, you're putting the kinyan on a time delay. You do the Mashiach now, but the kinyan's not going to take place 30 days from now. So the Gemara says, when Rav Yochanan says it works, that's when you say that 30 days from now it's effective, retroactive to this point in time. Meaning you have to make a connection between the actual transaction and the Maisa Kinyan and the action that you did to affect the transaction. Masha'in came when Rav Yochanan says it doesn't work, is when there's no connection between the action and the transaction. So if I do the action now and 30 days from now we say that the transaction occurs and there's no connection between them, so then Rav Yochanan says it doesn't work. But anyway, back to our discussion, back to the question of the Yavam who wants to do the mitzvah of Yibam. Essentially, even in story number two, the Gemara says it simply cannot be. Meaning there's no way that he can split the assets of his brother because, once again, it's a frozen asset. Ba'minei Ula, they ask the following question from Ula Yavam Vacha Kachile Mahu. What if he does a division after he does the mitzvah of Yibam? Lo asav lo klum. He did nothing. Meaning, no good. Even though it's quote-unquote his, But it's not. So, meaning it's a frozen asset. Chilek v'achakachiba mahu, loss of alokum. And then the Gemara points out another halacha, which seemingly is obvious. What if he tries to divide it before he does the mitzvah of yibum? So the Gemara says, well, that's nothing. So the Gemara says, maskala rav sheshes, hashtu yavam v'achakichilek, loss of alokum, chilek v'achakachiba mibaye. After you know halacha number one, you certainly know halacha number two. I mean, come on. In halacha number one, in other words, even after it's his, he can't divide it. So before it's his, of course he can't divide it. So it's once you know point one, point two is obvious. Shnei masim hayu. The Gemara answers very simply. The way it's presented to us seems like two is so obvious after knowing one. But the truth of the matter is that these were two different responses to two different scenarios. And they were just kind of presented to us back to back. But the truth of the matter is that they were two independent statements. Ki asa Rav and Amar Reish Lakish, ben yavam v'achar kach chilek, ben chilek v'achar kach yavam, lo asa v'lo klum, v'hilchasa lo asa v'lo klum. And the Gemara on this issue comes to a very resounding conclusion, and that is that it's a frozen asset, that when a yavam does a mitzvah of yibum, and he marries his yavama, and he gets the estate of his brother, so although he gets the estate of the brother, now after having learned all the yavamos, now that we learn ksuvas, and now we finished pei beis amud aleph, well, we didn't finish it yet, but as we're about to, so we're going to learn one very interesting clause, in that, yes, he inherited the entire estate of his brother, but no, he can't touch a single dollar of it. It's a frozen asset. It's a, he can't sell it. Correct. He can't sell it. He can't do anything with it because the reason is that it is totally secured for the ksuva of his wife. And even if it far exceeds the value of the ksuva of his wife, he still can't touch it. He can't do anything with it. Now, as Phil pointed out, and we learned in the Gemara yesterday, what he can do is he can get the dividends from that asset. So in other words, so if he wants to, not if he wants to, what he should do is he should convert it over into an estate, into real estate, and then have it produce dividends, and then with the payros that he can enjoy. But the actual estate itself, it cannot do anything with it, cannot sell it. Chalitza doesn't even get this whole discussion off the ground. Because with Chalitza, now he inherits nothing. Here, with Yibum, he inherits the estate, but now it's just, it's frozen. He can't do anything with it. In the case of Chalitza, he don't even inherit.
But then he does
because he's got to pay. All the assets is to guarantee the ketubah. So once the ketubah is paid, after
Chalitza, once the ketubah is paid, they're no longer married.
Regular,
if he does chalitza, right. So if he does chalitza, so then she's going to get a ksuva, and then the remainder of the estate is going to get divided amongst the brothers.
So then they
accomplish
the same thing.
What?
These brothers wanted to divide.
If they want to divide the asset. No, correct. But in our two cases that we learned today, he wants to do the mitzvah of Yibum. Right, that the whole start.
Their purpose is to divide the money.
The primary consideration in both of our stories, the one we saw yesterday and today, is that he wanted to do the mitzvah of Yibum, and then as a benefit or consequence, you know, you could say both. He's also going to get the entire estate of his brothers, of his deceased brother, and the other brothers are looking and saying, no, we don't want that. So they're going to try to block the mitzvah of Yibum so that they can get money. So that was the. You know, that was the give and take in both of those scenarios. But really, no. The prime goal was not to divide the estate. The prime goal was to do the mitzvah of Yibum.
It's the benefit of the other brothers if they do if chalitza.
Correct. Chalitza, right. Correct. Correct. Okay, let's go on. The Chachamim Omer Perasim Mechubarim Lekarka Shalom. Okay, the Chachamim say that if you have fruit connected to the ground, it belongs to him. That's how we read the Mishnah yesterday. Now, when I read the Mishnah yesterday, I just ran right through the Mishnah without making the obvious observation, which the Gemara is about to do. Amai v'alkol nechasa v'achrayim v'arvan l'ksuva. So the Gemara makes the obvious observation. Well, what does that mean? The fruit belonged to him. What? Right? It's part of the estate of the brother, and the entirety of the estate of the brother is all landlocked for her ksuva. So what do you mean it belongs to him? No, it doesn't belong to him. It belongs to her. So I'm Reish Lakish Tanishala. So Reish Lakish makes an important correction in the Mishnah. It's the Mishnah that we're making this correction. And that is when the Mishnah says the word shalom, so we're going to take the vav, we're going to replace it with the hay, and it means that, of course, it belongs to her, not to him. Okay? And end of that discussion. That's a quick editing. Kansa Arehi Kiyishto. And if they get married, so if the Yavam marries the Yavama, they are like husband and wife. So Lamai Hilchasa, they're like husband and wife. And obviously the Mishnah here is making a halachic statement. And so what is that halachic statement? Amar Rav Yosef Rabbi Chanina. So the Gemara says that now, that they're husband and wife, if he would like to terminate the marriage, get, you give her a divorce. Meaning, even though at one point in time historically she was Yavama, and even though at one point historically the way to sever the relationship would have been Chalitza, but now that you married her, now you're husband and wife. And now the only way to sever the relationship is only a get. And if you want to remarry her, you may, in fact, remarry her after the divorce as well. So the Gemara says, Beget Pshita, Ma'od Tem of Yima, Marachman of Adan Yivam, Mishom Alaha, Lotizgala Beget Allah. So the Gemara says, look, as far as get is concerned, here's a Havamina. Havamina would have been that even though she's your wife, she's also your Yavama. Meaning, to a certain degree, their status of Yavama never really left her. And maybe, the Gemara is Havamina. And maybe what should have happened is that if you want to terminate the relationship after you married her, so you give her a get because you married her, but at the same time also, do Chalitza as well. Because she's still a Yavama. And the proper severance of a Yavama is through Chalitza. So Kamash Malan, so the Gemara says, that's a Chiddush. Gemara says, Machzira Pshita. So the Gemara says, now you can marry her back. In other words, after you divorce her, you want to take her back again, so you're allowed to. So Ma'ud Detema Mitzvah, Derama Rechman Allah, Avda Bahash, take him a lebe, Kamash Malan. The Gemara says over here, it's a chiddush, and I'll tell you why. Because I might have thought the following. You had a mitzvah of Yibum. Now, without the mitzvah of Yibum, we know, we've spent an entire Masechta talking about this, good part of the Masechta, that without the mitzvah of Yibum, it's an Isser. She's Eshetach, she's your brother's wife. And that's an Erva, one of the Arayos in the Torah. So it's only because of the mitzvah that you're allowed to marry her. But without the mitzvah, then you're not allowed to marry her. So here's what I might have thought as a Havamina. You married her through the mitzvah of Yibum. And then it just didn't work out, and you divorced her. So now I might have said, I may have made the argument that we'll revert back to the Isser of Eshetach. You did your mitzvah of Yibum, you tried it, didn't work out, and now it reverts back to the Isser of Eshetach. You can't remarry her, because now the mitzvah of Yibum is gone, and all we're left with is Eshetach. Historically, she was your brother's wife, so you can't marry her. So the Gemara says, that's a Havamina, and the Chiddush is, no, you can remarry her. And the Gemara, it happens all the time. Gemara introduces us to a Havamina, and then the Gemara says, hey, that's a good Havamina. Right? Like, wait a second. Wait, the Gemara says, Ve'im ha'chanami. So the Gemara says, wait a second, that sounds right. Meaning, okay, the mitzvah of Yibum is gone, and now there's no longer a mitzvah of Yibum, it's Eshetach. Maybe you shouldn't marry her. Amakra, the Gemara says, V'lakcha lo li'isha, kemishlakcha, na'ases kishto. So the Gemara says, you're right, without the pasuk, the Havamina would have been excellent. But the pasuk's there to tell us that, once you marry her, harei kishto, she's like your wife. Meaning that the Yibum is gone. Her status of Eishes Ach is gone. She now is your full-fledged wife, and in the event that you divorce her and you want to take her back, so you could do it. You're allowed to do it. Bavach takes suvasal nichse balas harishon. My taima. Now, why is it that when the Yavam does a mitzvah of Yibam, he doesn't have to write her a ksuva? And why is it that the entire estate of the first husband is going to be the one securing the ksuva? So the Gemara says, "My tami isha tikna lo min hashamayim." So an idea that we've saw a couple times in Yavamos, and that is that Yavamos is fundamentally different than any other marriage. So we make the shidduch. We make the shidduch. At least, you know, we think we're making the shidduch, right? We do our part. But when it comes to Yibam, so that's strictly coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the one who made the shidduch. You weren't the one who made the shidduch. So therefore, you're not the one who has to front the money for the ksuva, or at least sign the ksuva. In other words, this was done strictly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Yileif Lemirish and the Islam Misheni Kadesh. Now let's say the brother dies with no money, and so therefore, even though the first brother wrote a ksuva, but there was nothing securing that piece of paper, and so now she's entering into your world. You're marrying her with no no actual assets that are backing, that are securing the ksuva, so then you have to write her a ksuva. And the reason why is because one of the primary purposes of a ksuva is that you're not so quick to divorce her. You think twice, maybe even a third time before divorcing her. So if you, if she comes into your marriage, and generally speaking, the yavama is going to be secured by the assets of the first husband, but now there are no assets, so you have to go ahead and write a ksuva and secure her with your assets so that you'll think twice, a third time before divorcing her.
Would the ktuba be 100 or 200?
Good question. It's a good question. I assume 100. That's a guess. I'm not sure.
Once she's divorced,
can
she marry?
She cannot. To the other brother, she says shatach.
The original ketubah. They keep the original ketubah. There's not 200. It's not long.
He asked the question. I'm not sure. Okay.
But yesterday we said that they keep the same ketubah if you remarry.
I understand, but he's asking in this scenario where the first brother didn't have an estate, and now it's upon the brother marrying her to write a ksuva. So he's asking whether that ksuva is 100, 200.
But isn't the Yavam...
100? Okay,
but
good.
Doesn't the Yavam obligated to fulfill the first ketubah?
Not if there's nothing securing it. If there's nothing securing it, so he's incumbent now to write his own ksuva.
But the thing is, he's back for a second.
Okay, let's discuss it further after. But the Gemara's halacha. I mean, the Mishnah's point is that he's writing a new ksuva.
And in this case, he doesn't have to redeem it if she's captured?
No, the Gemara over here, when the Gemara says the word, I understand that, but when the Gemara says tshuva here, over here, it's talking about mana masayim. It's talking about the 100, 200, I understand that, but no, I do understand what you're saying, but we're just focusing on the settlement aspect of it. The other tanaik tshuva, I assume, is all in force. Even though, you know, we're just talking about the settlement. Okay. Lo yom ala harei ksuvasech. Now, my vechein, the Gemara says, look, in two cases, a husband shouldn't stay. Now, the Mishnah talked about two cases. Well, first case, the Mishnah talked about Yavam Yavama, where the man says to his Yavama, look, I'm marrying you. That's great. I'm doing the mitzvah of Yibam. That's great. My brother, your husband, left a tremendous estate. That's also great. How about this? How about, let's just earmark the amount of estate that is commensurate to your ksuva, and let me handle the rest of the money. Unlock the rest of the money. So the Mishnah says don't do that. Okay, and as we already concluded in the beginning of today's shiur, in other words, that's the halacha. Then the Mishnah goes on to another point, which is as follows. In general, a husband and wife, not yibum, but in general, a husband and wife, a husband shouldn't say to his wife, you know, your ksuva is 200 zuz. Good. What I'll do is I'm going to just identify and pinpoint that my property, my assets that are worth 200, I'll bundle it for you, we'll tie it up, and good. And that'll be the payment for your ksuva. Husband shouldn't do that for his wife. Now, as we'll ultimately learn, the reason why, it's intuitive. And the Gemara is going to arrive at this conclusion, which is, it's not good for the marriage. In other words, the whole idea of ksuva is that he thinks once or twice before divorcing her. Once he earmarks a certain amount of his money for the ksuva, so then he knows exactly what's going to cost him to divorce his wife. So it's just not good. It's not going to be healthy for the relationship. Anyway, the Gemara will take just a moment to get to that point. So the Gemara says, The Gemara says, look, why would I have thought it's different? I thought it to be different because in the case of a regular marriage, not only does a husband commit his current assets towards the ksuva, but a husband in a ksuva document writes, anything I will buy also will end up securing your ksuva as well. De kanai u de kanina, that which I bought and that which I will buy. So you could make the argument, the Gemara is going to try to make the argument, that if that's true, then even if the husband secures a certain amount for the ksuva, but she'll still be more or less comfortable knowing that not only is his current assets going to secure, but the future assets as well. Kamashman, the chiddush of the Gemara is, it's not good. It's just simply not good for the marriage for the husband to identify this is going to go towards your ksuva. Girsha ein la ela ksuvasa, girsha ein lo girsha lo, kamashman kid Rabbi Abba. So the Gemara says, that the when can the husband help himself to the assets of his brother? That's only upon divorce. But prior to the point of divorce, he can't. And that's like we learned and yesterday with the halacha of Rabbi Abba. Now what if he takes back his yavama? So he takes back his yavama. So he could use the original ksuva. When a man divorces his wife and takes her back, he can go back to the original ksuva. The Gemara says, look, here's the Havamina. Havamina would have been like this. A regular husband and wife, he divorces her, he takes her back. I certainly understand. He was the one who wrote the original ksuva. He wants to take her back. Let's go back. Let's rely on the original ksuva. Fine, that's not a problem. But in the case of Yibum, here's what I would have thought. I might have thought he wasn't the original writer of the ksuva. His brother was the original writer of the ksuva. So if he's doing the mitzvah of Yibum and he's stepping into the shoes of his brother, fine, we're going to piggyback off the original ksuva. But if he divorces her and remarries her, I might have thought, now this is a marriage where he's marrying her and it's not a mitzvah of Yibum, and he's not going into the shoes of his brother, and therefore I might have thought that he should be writing now an original ksuva representing this new marriage. That's the chiddush of the Mishnah.
So
that
it doesn't change value.
If you're using, let's go back to the point we made earlier. Using the original ksuva, correct. But we're talking about if you're writing a new ksuva, so you're writing a new ksuva, so then yes. I'm Rav Yehuda Bishana, he calls him Labasula, Masam, Lamana, Manavayu, Maskinim, Valo, Yonasim, Nashim. Originally, they would write for the Basula 200 and for an Amana 100. Vayu, Maskinim. And what happened was is that men were getting old. It's a great expression of the Gemara, meaning originally there was no shibud, meaning that the husband was originally writing a ksuva and committing himself to pay it, but just committing himself, meaning don't worry, I'll pay it, right? As the old expression goes, smoke a lie, don't worry, rely upon me. Okay, that's when you get nervous. So you don't do that. So over here, that's the way ksuvas were originally instituted or handled, I would say. And then the men would get old, v'lo yunosim nashim, and they wouldn't marry women. In other words, really, this is a Bryce's nice way of saying the women weren't interested. Meaning, women wanted a husband, that's true, but they also want security. And a husband saying, don't worry, I'm going to pay 200 zuz, don't worry, and I'll pay it. And not that I'm going to place any type of lien in any of my properties. Don't get crazy. But in other words, but I'll pay it. So the women at that point in time didn't have that security. So and it was one of the institutions of Shimon Meshetach. Shimon Meshetach, one of the zugos, one of the pairs of Tanayim. So this takes us to more or less the beginning of Bayis Sheni. More or less. So one of his institutions is that when you write a ksuva, you are also being mishabed, you are creating a lien against all your properties, all current and future properties, against the ksuva. That gave the woman peace of mind. And as the old expression goes, they lived happily ever after. Men and women got married. Tanya Namehacha, the Gemara quotes a brisa that represents this very same idea. And that is Barishana Yikosun Labasula Masayim Lamana Mana. Originally, the ksuva was 200-100. But again, the same point. The brisa is reiterating the same point. But originally, there was no shibun. And men were getting old, and they weren't getting married because no woman wanted that. So over here in the Brisa, we get like a little more detail in terms of, you know, sometimes we see enactments, takanos, and it kind of comes to us like we went from 0 to 60. But over here in the Brisa, it's giving us like a little more like trial and error period regarding what the final institution looks like. Right, so it's just, you know, improvements over one over the other condition. So the next step was, the Bryce had just described, is that what he would do is he would put the money, he would leave the money by his father-in-law's house, and so, okay, so at least now, it's a little more security, because he wrote a ksuva, and if necessary, the money's over there by your father-in-law's house. But the Gemara points out that that really wasn't good, because the moment he got angry, he said, you know what, go back to your parents. So a new institution was made, and this was, is that what they would again put up the money for the ksuva at the beginning of the marriage, and not send it to his in-laws, but keep it by his parents. So Ashir so Kalato Shal Kesev Vishal Zahav. So the wealthy people would make up gold and silver baskets, and Anios Ayosan also Avit Shel Meme Reglayim. And those families who were not that wealthy, so what they would do is that this ksuva payment was converted over into a urinal. I don't understand the significance, but anyway. But still, in other words, once you have a prepared portfolio, a prepared asset for the ksuva, so once again, the problem now becomes is that he loses his patience, he loses his cool, and he says, you know what, that's it, let's put an end to this. Oh, your ksuva? Okay, we already earmarked that gold basket for your ksuva. So go take it and go leave. So tzi'i ad shebav Rabbi Shimon Meshetach v'tiken shiu kosev la kol nechsai achron l'ksivasa. And Shimon Meshetach came up with the best solution, and that is that a shibud. In other words, now a lien, a security, is going to be from all of his properties towards the ksuva, and that way, no single item is going to be earmarked or identified for the ksuva, and now, so to say, all of his properties are mortgaged against the ksuva, so now that makes the husband think once, twice, even a third time, before divorcing his wife, and the Gemara says, and now they lived happily ever after, Hajra Chaisha, and that is the end of the eighth parak. Okay, a ninth parak of the Masechta Pei Gimel, today's daf. Let's begin. Okay, we know that a number of things come to the husband as part of the remuneration of marriage. Marriage, of course, is beautiful, it's bliss, it's great, and when we learn tzuvos, we're really focusing on the financial aspects of the marriage. We know that many of the things, financial obligations that a husband goes to his wife, mizonos, clothing, right, house, home, basic financial obligations that a husband has towards his wife, and then, in exchange, the Chachamim Institute, they mandated that certain things go from the wife back to the husband. And so now what we're going to be learning in the course of our Mishnah is what if the husband would like to excuse himself from those financial benefits? In other words, can he simply put a stop to those financial benefits? That's what we're going to be learning in the course of our Mishnah, in the first discussion of the ninth parak. Kosev l'ishto, and he writes the following to his wife. Dinu dvarim ein li b'nechsech. I don't want anything to do with your property. Meaning, look, I'm happy with the marriage. I don't need any type of financial reward. You're going to be just fine enough. And he says, "Dinu dvarim ein lebenechsech." I do not want a part of your estate. Hareza ochel peros bechayaham. So the Mishnah says he's still going to get the peros. He didn't excuse himself from that. The Mezer Yorsha, and on top of that also, if she dies, he's going to inherit her. So in other words, he'll get that benefit as well. So Im Kein Lamakasav La Dinu Dvar Mainly Ainly Benechsech. So then you only have to wonder. So if he's getting the Peros and he's getting Yerusha, so this very noble act on the part of the husband where he's excusing himself from the financial benefits of his wife, so what exactly did he give up in this act of nobility? So the Gemara says, no, he did actually give up something, which is that she now has the right to sell her nechse malug. We learned already in the previous parak that a woman having undergone nisuin cannot sell her nechse malug. B'dieved cannot sell her nechse malug. So by him writing dinu dvarim, it's a siluk. He removes himself, meaning he removes his ability to block her sale of the nechse malug. Okay, that is the first ruling of the Mishnah. Much to discuss in the Gemara. When we get to the Gemara, we're gonna go back and we're gonna discuss this in much greater detail. So let's say he excuses himself from the following. In the second case of the Mishnah, he says, "I do not want a part of your estate." and the Paris as well. He specifically mentions that he wants to excuse himself from the Paris. So now, once again, let's start off with the original point, which is that she could sell the estate if she wants to. And on top of that, he also, by refusing Peros, he's actually excusing himself from the Peros. V'imesa Yersha. However, he did not excuse himself from inheriting her estate, meaning that when she predeceases him, so he's going to inherit her estate, and even though he was Masalik, he removed himself, that's only during her lifetime. But after her death, he's still going to inherit her estate. Rav Yehuda Omer La'olam Ocha Peri Perisat Sheikhtav La Dinudvaim Ein Li Benechsecho V'Perisem V'Perisem Ad Olam. Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that the secondary derivatives is still beneficial to him, he could still benefit from it, the Pere Peros, and in order to excuse himself from that, so what he has to write is that I am removing myself from your estate, your Peros, and your Pere Peros, and all residual Peros as well, or residual benefits, I'm removing myself. Only when he uses that language does he totally remove himself from the Peros.
Is it a form of Neda he's mentioning?
No, we're gonna talk. Again, when we get to the Gemara, we'll speak about the mechanics of how all this is working. Now we get to the third case of the Mishnah, and as you can now imagine, you see how the Mishnah is incrementally moving to where he's more and more removing himself from his wife's estate. I am separating myself from your estate, from your payers, from your payre payros, both while you're alive and also post-mortem as well. So, eno ochel payros, so here it is a total siluk, it's a total removal from her estate, so that not only is he not getting going to be benefiting from any of the peros while she's alive, but furthermore after she's dead, he does not inherit the estate as well. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer imesa yershena. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says it's that last point over there where I'm going to disagree with. Even if he says, I am separating myself, I'm removing myself from your estate while you're alive and after you die, meaning I'm not going to yarshin you. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel on this point says he's still going to yarshin her. Why? Because what is he doing over here? He's making a condition against that which is written in the Torah. And we know that you cannot overwrite the Torah, overwrite and override the Torah. If the Torah says that a husband inherits his wife, so then that's the halachas of the Torah, and you cannot be masna mashakatsa b'Torah. Okay, this is a topic that we covered a couple days ago in the daf. We get to see it again right now, and ostensibly that's Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's opinion, which means the Tanakhama argues. What's the Tanakhama's viewpoint? Ostensibly, and take a look at the last Rashi in the Mishnah, second to last Rashi in the Mishnah, the long one, where Rashi brings down that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is of the opinion that a husband inherits his wife min haTorah. Now, you're not going to see it anywhere explicitly in the Torah where the Torah says that a husband inherits his wife. It's based on a drasha, but the drasha operates on a Torah level. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that a husband inherits his wife min haTorah. So now, since that's a Torah obligation, that a husband inherits the wife, he can't condition otherwise. He can't state, you know, I don't want to inherit you. What do you mean? The Torah grants him that Yerusha min haTorah. And ostensibly, that would mean that the Tanakhama disagrees. The Tanakhama is of the opinion that Yerusha Sabal is not min haTorah, it's only min derabbanan. And therefore, if he wants to make conditions against that, he may do so. Once again, I'm just laying down the very basics of the Mishnah.
Is this look like as like a neder? Because if he's like a neder, then you can say you cannot go get a Mishnah.
Right.
But if he's like declining to that part of the Mishnah, it's
a... So Phil asked that question. So again, when we get to the Gemara, that point will be a little bit clearer.
How about the Bukhah? Can you say, I don't want double?
Right. Right. So all that's going to be dependent on this issue of whether or not you can masna mashakaza b'Torah. Okay, Tani Rabbi Chiya. So the first point of the Gemara is a very simple point, and that is that in our Mishnah, the verb that opens up our Mishnah is akosef. The Mishnah says that if a man wants to remove himself from the estate of his wife, so again, removal, we talked about in our Mishnah in three stages. Removal of his ability to block the sale of her property, removal from the peiros, and ultimately the removal of his Yerusha. But the verb used in our Mishnah is akosev. Sounds like from the Mishnah that the only way to properly remove yourself from these assets is only to put it down in writing. The Braisa quotes Rabbi Chia, the Braisa of Rabbi Chia says, Ha'omer le'ishto. You don't. This doesn't have to go down in writing. To make such a condition does not have to be in writing. It can even be stated, and that would be sufficient. And now, okay, good. And now the Gemara gets on to the big topic of today's discussion, and that's the following. What is going on? He is removing himself from his wife's property. Now, generally speaking, if we want to look at a husband and wife together, so basically it's a form of a partnership. Partnership is not really the best way to describe it. Partnership means that we have equal shares in equal number of shares in a particular venture. So a partnership is not the best way to describe it, but just in terms of a description, we could describe it as a partnership. Now, generally speaking, let's say that we have a partnership. Danny, you and I are partners in a venture, in a business. So how exactly do I transfer my ownership of my shares over to you? So obviously, there's going to be a chov, there's going to be an obligation. Obviously, you have to pay me. But I'm just talking about the method in which I transfer my shares over to you. So that's what we're going to be discussing right now. So the Gemara says, v'chi kasav lahachi mayhavi. Even if I write this, meaning a husband writes to his wife, I'm removing myself from this venture. Now again, this venture does not mean the marriage. He's very interested in the marriage. In other words, the financial aspects of the marriage. The Gemara says, okay, and if he says that, so what? V'atanya v'lantan on b'raisa. Ha'om al-chaver dinu dvarim ein li al-sadazu. V'ein li esek ba. V'yadi misulak yasemena. Lo amar klum. The Gemara quotes the Braisa. The Braisa over here describes a partnership. Two partners are invested in a venture. They have shares. Each one of them, let's call them, 50% shareholders in a venture. And one says to the other, any one of the following language. Ein li al sadazu. You know what? I'm not part of this property anymore. Or, ein li esek ba. I don't want any business in this anymore. Or, yadi misulak yaseimena. I'm withdrawing my hand from it. So all these are passive and ineffective. Lo amar klum. You've said nothing. Meaning, a relinquishment of your shares is not a form of transferring ownership to the other partner. And so over here, what bothers the Gemara is as follows. You write, or as the Rabbi Chia says, you state to your wife that I'm removing myself from the peiros. That's totally ineffective. It's an ineffective form of removing yourself from a partnership. You want, the only thing you could do is transfer positively your shares to somebody else, either to your partner or to somebody else. But you can't just simply walk away. That's just simply not a form of transferring share. I'm a debate Raviana because of love Oda Arusa. So the Gemara says, Raviana says, very good. In other words, agreed. No disagreement. After Nisuin, any one of these languages that we just described in our Mishnah is no good. After Nisuin, he is I'm using the term in this case loosely. He is a partner in her inner estate. And to just simply use languages of passivity, of I'm going to remove myself, that's just simply ineffective. However, where it can be effective is prior to the Nisuin. If before the Nisuin, in other words, so he's not yet a partner. Again, after Eris and before Nisuin, they're married, but they haven't striked a financial partnership yet. That financial partnership begins at the point of Nisuin. And if before the point of Nisuin, he says to her, here we go, we're going to go into a marriage and there's going to be financial obligations, and I'm totally prepared to for everything on my end. I'll feed you, I'll support you, I'll give you a house, everything. And you know what? I'm going to remove myself from your properties, again, in any one of the forms that we just learned in the Mishnah, from your ability to sell, from your peros, from your Yerusha. he can use the passive language before nisuin. The Gemara says, because of Lava Oda Rusa, Kedrav Kahana, Amrav Kahana, Nachla Habal Adam Imakam Acher, if let's say you know a property is coming to you, Adam Masnala Shalo Yirashena, so what you could do is you can block its entrance. Uchidravad Amarava Homer e Efshi, but Takanas Chachamim Kigonzu, Shamim Lo. Alright, the Gemara quotes a statement by Rava that makes this very same point. If a man says, e Efshi, I am not interested in this particular Takanas Chachamim, Shamim Lo, so he has every right to do that. We listen to him. Meaning, so what you can do is you could use the passive language of, I'm withdrawing myself, not after you entered into the partnership. At that point in time, it's too late. But before entering into the partnership, you want to block something so that you're allowed to do. Mike, you're going to zoo.
Strange, though, before he has it, he can do it. And once he has it, he can give it away. I mean, it's not,
well, again, not like, not giving it away, just withdrawing.
I know, but he could give it away.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I knew that question was coming.
It's abandoned.
I'm not sure about that. I saw that question coming, but I'm not sure. But anyway, Mike going zoo. Let's just finish up the Gemara. So when we say like this, in other words, here's an example where he can there could be withdrawal. Now here, this particular example, we're going in the other direction, where the wife says to her husband, "Look, I know you have an obligation to support me and feed me, and I know in exchange for that, my productivity, my masi adaim go to you. How about this? How about you don't feed me, and my masi adaim keep it, stay with me?" So again, before the marriage, she has every right to do that. So just an example where a withdrawal, she can withdraw from that obligation. So the Gemara says, "Yahachi afilu nesuin ami." So the Gemara says, "Okay, a withdrawal works before nesuin. How about after nesuin?" Now, it's kind of funny. At this point in time, we already know the answer to this question. But let the Gemara spell it out. I feel a nesu'a nami, so why can't he withdraw after nesu'in? I'm Rabbi nesu'a yado ki yada. So Abaye says that after nesu'in, she'a yado ki yada. His hand is like her hand. In other words, they're now partners. There's a partnership formed between him and her over the estate. And so therefore, his hold on that property is like her hold. Now again, it's interesting. It doesn't mean that he's an owner of the property. He's not an owner of the property. But because he has certain rights and entitlements to that property, so it's as if he has a holding on that property. And once he has a holding on that property, a withdrawal just simply is not going to work out. Now, Nesu Yado Ki Yada, Rav Amar Yado Adifa Mi Yada. Now Rava goes one step further and he says his holding is actually stronger than her holding. Nafka Minel Shomer's Yavam. And now we're saying it a little bit differently, right, in the second version, but and it does play out a practical difference, and that's by Shomer's Yavam. Okay, I'm not going to go through the Rashi right now. I strongly encourage that you go through the Rashi over here, Nafka Minel Shomer's Yavam. This takes us back to the world of Yavamos, where we learned that there's a subtle difference between saying his holding is like her holding, or his holding is a little bit greater than her holding. See Rashi for an illustration of how that plays out in another arena in Halacha. In the meantime, however, basically, what happens after they get married is partnership. And since they're partnership after they get married, now what? You can't withdraw. Partners cannot just simply walk away from their shares. That is not going to be, that has no validity, no effective nature whatsoever. It's only when you positively transfer your shares over to somebody else, only that's going to be effective. Okay, Ibailahu. Let's finish up today. Kanu miyado mahu. Okay. What if you do the following? What if you use the language of our Mishnah, where you say dinu dvarim, and you're trying to withdraw yourself, and as we learned in our Mishnah, it is ineffective, but what you then do is, well, again, I'm sorry, in the Mishnah it's effective because you did it before the Erisin. But what we just learned together is that at Nisuin, at the point of Nisuin, after Nisuin, you can't do it. It's ineffective, and the reason why is because you're now partners. Gemara's question now goes like this. What if you try to withdraw yourself using the language of Din HaDvarim, and you ratify it with a Kenyan? You do a Kenyan. Right, Rashi says, "Kanu miyado mahu abraisa da omel chaver dunu dvar mainly asad azukai avam masis on lamahanya kinyan liafos kocha da baamira belolosha matanasagi lestaluke afilu megufa shokarka hecha deparsh kedip tani seifa v'tam de masis and damar hariza ocha peres lamishem grace the loshen dunu dvar mahu ela mishem delo pireish mi mai salak nafshe." I'm sorry. The end of the Rashi. So Hilkach Mali Kanu Mali Lo Kanu. Ella Abraisa Kabailo Diktani La Lo Amar Klum Vitaim Mishum Griasa Delishnahi. So again, so in the Braisa we said that if your partnership and you cannot withdraw, but what if you said Dinu Dvarim, I'm withdrawing, and you ratify with a Kenyan and a Kenyan Chalipim. That's the next Rashi. So the Kenyan Chalipim, the Kenyan Sudder, right, a handkerchief, you right, pick it up. Okay. Ready? Good. I'm withdrawing. And not only am I withdrawing, but here we go, Kenyan. And the question is a very simple question. So Rav Yosef says, you know what you just ratified? You just ratified the statement of dinu dvarim. Meaning, right. What's nothing times nothing?
Nothing.
So in other words, the original statement was I'm withdrawing. You can't withdraw when you are a partner. So when you make a kinyan on that withdrawal, so all you did was just substantiate nothing. Okay, you affirm nothing. Good. Congratulations. Or, said the Gemara, says that's Rav Yosef's opinion, Rav Nachman Amar, Migufa Shakarka Kanamiyado. No, that kinyan was separate from the Dinu Dvarim, meaning the Dinu Dvarim was your statement saying that I'm withdrawing. But now once you made a kinyan, that kinyan is a transfer of your shares of the property. Amar Rabbi Mistabra Milsad Rav Yosef Ba'orer. So, the Abaye says, I think Rav Yosef is correct. Now remember, Rav Yosef was the one who said that it is insignificant. I think Rav Yosef is correct, the Orer. So, but Orer, take a look at the top Rashi on the Yamud base. Keshabach haver zela achzik bechalko miyad amad v'irer ala matana v'amar lo nasati lecha sasada udinu dvarim ba'amar amati lach shalo ariv imach. I said dinu dvarim just so that we wouldn't fight. But the truth of the matter is that, and I know we made a kinyan, but I'm not right. But I really didn't. I didn't sell you the share. So I think Rav Yosef writes bar Rav Abba Omeid. But if, however, he comes in and assumes ownership of the property because you said dinu dvarim. And you didn't protest, and you made a kinyan. So then I think Rav Nachman is right. So then migufa shel karka kana miyado. Amar amei mehochasam migufa shel karka kana miyado. And again on this, the Gemara arrives at a very clear conclusion, and that is that you are with a kinyan, even though you only said dinu dvarim, you have in fact given over your shares to the other shareholder. Amle Rav Ashla member be'orer or be'omeid. So the Gemara says, are you talking about in a case where at the time of transfer he was protesting or was he silent? L'may nafkamin l'chad Rav Yosef. So he says, what do you mean? The nafkamin is for Rav Yosef. Amle lo shmi'ali klamar lo sfi'ali. No, I don't agree with Rav Yosef. I think that once you make a kinyan, so then you are successfully transferred in your shares, even though you use a language of dinu dvarim. But because you made a kinyan, so therefore it's going to be successfully transferred over. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we pick up at the two dots.